Listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You're listening to CQUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial, and www.cqut.ca online.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Candace.
And my name is Virginia.
And we'll be your hosts for today. Today on the show, you will hear an informal conversation recorded by Bursts from the Final Straw Radio in Asheville, North Carolina. It's a conversation about prison radio projects, and Virginia is one of the people in the conversation. We also have an interview with Carl from Chris Blubbedeb Publishing about the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar launch, which is taking place tomorrow night. But first, some news items.
The companies LeMay and Group A have been awarded the contract for the new immigration detention center that is being built near Montreal. The center is slated to be built in Laval in the next 2 years. According to Amy Darwish from Solidarity Across Borders, who we interviewed in November, the center will expand the Canadian Border Service Agency's ability to detain migrants, including children.
Prisoners in Florida have announced their plans to initiate a work stoppage or lay down beginning Monday, January 15th, coinciding with MLK Day, the holiday in the U.S. that commemorates Martin Luther King Jr. The prisoners are demanding payment for their labor, the end of outrageous canteen prices, and the reintroduction of parole incentives to lifers. They also expressed support for the following goals: the end to overcrowding and acts of brutality committed by officers throughout the Florida Department of Corrections, the exposure of the environmental conditions Florida prisoners face, including extreme temperatures, mold, contaminated water, and being placed next to toxic sites such as landfills, military bases, and phosphate mines. They want the state to honor the moratorium on state executions without the legal loophole now being used to kill prisoners on death row, and they want the restoration of voting rights for prisoners regardless of criminal convictions. They plan to stop working for at least 1 month or longer.
On November 30th, 2017, the Toronto Star reported that the Ontario Human Rights Commission announced in late November that it is launching a public interest inquiry into racial profiling and discrimination within the Toronto Police Service. According to the OHRC's chief commissioner, the hope for the commission is that it will, quote, pinpoint where racial disparities exist on a systemic level. The commission has requested 7 years' worth of data from the Toronto Police Service. According to the Facebook page of Black Lives Matter Toronto, quote, this inquiry is massive and has implications for community advocates across the province.
According to the Journal de Québec, the province is experiencing record levels of people serving weekend sentences, many of whom are sleeping on mattresses in provincial prison gymnasiums. Some people are also being forced to pass the weekend in the cells under the Palais de Justice because of the lack of space in the provincial prisons. The public security minister, Olivier Kanté, stated that the provincial prisons have about 400 places, including the mattresses in the gym, for people passing weekend sentences. However, there are around 600 people who are being forced to report to prison on any given weekend. So the total number of people serving their sentences intermittently for 2016-2017 is 6,361, up from 5,828 in 2015-2016. And the time is now 5:07. As promised, up first, we have the informal conversation recorded by Bursts from Asheville, North Carolina's radio show called The Final Straw. The conversation features Montreal Prison Radio correspondent Virginia, as well as Kingston's Prison Radio correspondents Rico and Alex and Erica from the June 11th Day of Solidarity with long-term anarchist prisoners. In the conversation, everyone talks about the importance of prison-related radio projects and explains how their audio projects work. So that's what's coming up next here on the Prison Radio Show on CQUT.
So you're listening to an informal conversation between people who are involved in a few different prison radio projects in North America, or prison-related audio projects based out of North America. Well, first off, I'm Burst. I'm involved in The Final Straw Radio out of North Carolina. But I wonder if folks wouldn't please introduce themselves and say what their projects are.
I'm Virginia. I work on the Prison Radio Show in Montreal.
My name's Rico. I work on the CFRC Prison Radio Show in Kingston.
My name's Erica. I work on June 11th, the International Day of Solidarity with Long-Term Anarchist Prisoners.
My name's Alex. I'm an occasional contributor to the CFRC Prison Radio Show.
Would you all say a few words about what sort of work your projects do and how your projects relate to prisoners? Like, do you have co-contributors? Or do they help format the show? Or are they just subject matter?
So in Montreal, right now, we have one inside correspondent. His name is Mutia Jamwa-Sabro. He's in prison in Pennsylvania. He got a life sentence as a 17-year-old and has been doing a lot of advocacy ever since around folks sentenced to life who are kids. And he calls in every once in a while and like gives us a long segment, and we air those. We also had an inside correspondent named Chaz Ransom, who was in prison in New York State, who's also a lifer, and he would contribute content by sending letters to us, and we'd read them out on air. He just got released, so we're hoping he can get involved on the outside, but we'll see. And we just managed to do a really long interview with Jaleel Muntakim, who's also in prison in New York State, and we'll see if any correspondence-type stuff comes out of that. But in general, the show is organized by three or four folks on the outside, and we have a phone line that prisoners can call at the station and leave messages for us if they want to, and we accept letters, we'll read letters out on the air and things like that, and we try and interview mostly people who have either done time or are in the process of doing time, or people who do a lot of support for people who are doing time, and time like all across the spectrum, so like people doing time in the criminal system, people doing time in the immigration system. We're pretty open to like collaborating with pretty, anyone who has like pretty broad definitions of doing time. We've also talked a lot about expanding that into like mental hospital type situations, like folks who are in lockdown in shitty places like that. So I don't think we've actually acted on that yet, but we've talked a lot about that. So confinement writ broadly is kind of like the focus of the show, and a lot of people who listen to our show are actually incarcerated themselves. Our radio station can send a signal that goes into a bunch of different prisons. There's a couple prisons off the island of Montreal that can hear us. There's some prisons in northern New York State that can hear us. So we sort of end up with contributions also just through like people who listen to the show, who give us feedback and thoughts on what they want to hear.
Can I ask a quick question? The people that are currently incarcerated that you get, or a number of the people that you get contributions from who are currently incarcerated are within the United States. Is it harder to get word from prisoners directly in Canadian prisons, or is it what sort of makes it so that y'all focus in that way on that topic?
I think on some level it's like a little bit riskier for folks who are within our listening range to be contributing regularly. So Muti isn't, like, you can't hear our show in Pennsylvania. So I think it's, like, not super risky for him to put his name on air and, like, put his voice out there and stuff. But it can be risky for people to get involved in media projects, especially in the Canadian system. It seems like Canadian prison officials really don't like it when prisoners talk to the media. They don't like letting the media into the prison. I've heard stories of prisoners who were in touch with news stations who wanted to do specials on them, and the prison administration was like, absolutely no, we won't let you do that. So yeah, it just seems like slightly harder to get people's voices out of the Canadian system in some ways. I wonder if that's because that system is smaller and it's easier for the admin to just like crack down on everybody.
We have 6 federal prisons within the listening range of CFRC in Kingston, and I believe our signal also reaches Cape Vincent Correctional in upstate New York and a provincial jail. So we do try to sort of tailor the show for prisoner listeners, and so we try to, you know, as much as engagement as we can sort of get, and of course we do get some interference with that from prison officials from time to time, but yeah, the show is tailored to amplify those voices and share information between institutions, because it is probably the least censored form of communication that exists in terms of, like, compared to letters or visits or phone calls. Radio is a fairly uncontrolled medium to share information. And also once a month we do, like, a show that's explicitly for call-ins, song requests, and messages and stuff like that. And so it really just depends on sort of how strong our connections are locally, and that does ebb and flow and sort of also relate to what's going on inside and how much people are interested in reaching out and sharing their stories. So, like, every year we do a Prisoner's Justice Day special broadcast, which is a really important day of remembrance of prisoners who have died in prisons, and it's sort of a day of protest as well against kinds of conditions that are killing people. And around that time, we always get, like, a big flood of information and song requests and people's families calling from Toronto and Kingston and other places where they are. So certainly, like, we know people are listening, but the degree of participation tends to sort of be related to how much people have to say and how much they want to engage.
We've also on occasion had people in prison who were able to call and either record something or call in and have them speak directly on the radio, which is nice for people to be able to communicate directly with other prisoners in that way.
And maybe, I don't know if this is a difference between Canada and the U.S., but for phone calling from federal prisons, like, you have to have pre-clearance, like, before someone can dial that number. So that, unlike in, like, a provincial jail, so you can kind of call anyone, collect. It can be pretty hard to set that up. It's very controlled.
So June 11th is a little bit different. It's been around as a day of solidarity for a number of years in a few different manifestations. But last year was the first year that we did this interview project. So we did, I think, 8 or 9 interviews in the months leading up to June 11th with people in prison, people who were formerly incarcerated, and then supporters of people who are still incarcerated or have just been doing that work for a long time. So we sort of covered all those parts of it. Like Rico mentioned, getting calls with prisoners can be hard. So we go through like support networks, and that's how we found a lot of our contacts for those interviews. And those were really focused around what prisoner support has looked like for them, and how it can be better, and how June 11th can contribute to that, and like lessons that we've learned. And another cool thing about last year is that there were a handful of like music project contributions to June 11th, more so than there had been. There was like a benefit CD that came out of a few places. So there's kind of like a whole spectrum there of new contributions to June 11th. And also all the interviews were transcribed so that they could be sent into prisoners, since just that audio on the internet isn't accessible to people in prison. But hopefully some of those transcripts did get inside.
And we re-aired one of your interviews on our show, so hopefully other radio shows are picking up the audio too.
Yeah.
Same.
That's awesome. Well, okay, so just for clarity, our project, The Final Straw, also, we have like a weekly contribution from Sean Swain, who's a prisoner in the state of Ohio who calls out, and occasionally folks associated mostly with the anarchist Black Cross, I guess, nebulous cloud of activists around North America have gotten us into contact with prisoners in various parts of the country to hear their voices. But frequently we make announcements about people's current situations, or talk to activists on the outside about either specific prisoners or uprisings or struggles that are going on the inside. Does anyone have any thoughts or responses to the question of, like, is there something special about the human voice, or anything that's particularly like important about getting prisoners' actual voices out there? Do you make a choice when you have the two options of a kind of crappy recording of a prisoner through the system versus something that's more clear that someone else could read?
I would rather use voices of folks inside. Like, when I've had folks call in before, but like they're calling in to a phone that's not the station phone, and I'm just putting them on speakerphone and putting a recorder up next to the phone, and the audio quality is not amazing, but having people be able to say things in their own voice feels pretty important. Certainly when we were doing this process of interviewing Jaleel, it felt really important to be getting his voice out of that prison. I feel like so many folks have done a lot of support for him over the years, and people on the outside were telling me, like, oh, if you could get him to read his own poetry, which wasn't possible in the end, like, it would be great to have him reading his own poetry in his own voice, because so many people have, like, read his poetry on the outside as part of, like, awareness-raising campaigns for him. So it does feel important to people to, like, hear the voices of folks who are locked up. And it feels important to be able to, like, bring those voices into other prisons, because there is so much restricted communication between people who are currently incarcerated.
In our project, I can think of a few examples where we weren't able to get the voices of the people who we were having the show on actually out there. Like, years ago, we interviewed the mother of Connor Stevens, who's one of the Cleveland Four, about her son's case. And that was pretty moving, hearing her, like, talk about his case and also share some of his writings, and share some of her experiences, of his experiences on the inside. And also, a few years back, a friend was able to record a conversation with Ariana, the daughter of Marius Mason, who's one of the main June 11th prisoners, and having that person just share experiences, like, the emotion just travels through the voice. And I think that there's something, not to sound like a hipster about audio stuff, but I think there's something that definitely is, like, touching, and you can't ignore the sound of, like, someone who actually loves someone else expressing disdain, like, fear and pain and loss, and also appreciation.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I found really moving about these June 11th interviews. Hopefully you can't tell in the recordings, but there are definitely times that we were, like, tearing up hearing these people talk about some of their best friends and their family and their loved ones, and I think that you can't really get that any other way.
I just never feel like I could do justice to someone else's words, like, you know, and sometimes it's the only option available. But even in a basic, like, on our monthly calls from home, like, if somebody's saying, like, I love you and I miss you, if that's the person, you know, like, that's someone in prison who's hearing, ideally, you know, a family member or a loved one say that to them, like, I could never do justice to that. sort of emotional sort of thing that happens when someone does that. So that's always our first preference, even if it's poor quality.
Yeah, it feels like a really important way of battling the alienating that is prisons, no matter what someone's in for. The fact is they're being withdrawn from their natural environment, from their community of loved ones. And I think, like, Sean Swain, I think, put it in a conversation on prison radio on CKUT once, saying that it was like being outside of the bars for 5 minutes a week, basically. And it was pretty, like, moving for me to hear that I could contribute to that sort of thing.
Yeah, the prison radio show had an inside correspondent for years named Pete Collins. And I think some of the I don't know, when he died, there were, like, a ton of people who got together for all the different services for him in a bunch of different cities across Canada. And a lot of the ways that people had interacted with him were through his, like, radio correspondence, like, getting to hear his voice, putting his voice up on YouTube after it had been on the radio. It was, like, a really good way for folks on the outside to hear about him and hear about his struggles and stuff.
It would feel a bit wrong not to mention the work that Noelle Hanrahan's done over the years with Prison Radio, in particular with the voice of Mumia Abu-Jamal, who was a correspondent for NPR, like, and was on the inside, too, but was a journalist before he went in, and his voice, I know, is, like, does audio correspondences getting rebroadcast on NPR and on Pacifica stations, on Democracy Now, on the internet. He's got just such a powerful voice that his writing's amazing, but it can't possibly, like, demonstrate the depth of his words. That was a huge influence for me, getting into doing this sort of work. Do y'all have any influences that specifically, like, prompted you into wanting to do it, whether it be, like, a personal interaction or another project?
I think for me it was a very compelling way to communicate across prison walls, and one of the more direct ways that we have at our disposal. And I have heard from people just that they appreciate being able to hear that and hear either people's voices from the inside, or appreciating, like, the Prisoner Justice Day broadcast of hours of messages and music from loved ones and things like that. I'm glad to be able to take part in that.
Yeah, we certainly borrow a lot of audio from Noelle and folks at Prison Radio. It's great that they do what they do. I would also shout out the person who was doing Prison Radio in Montreal before I started doing it. She taught me everything I know about radio stuff and was a pretty amazing mentor in terms of, like, this show is for folks on the inside, and, like, you're going to use this show to, like, amplify voices of folks on the inside, and giving me some tips and tricks about how to do that. She's super solid, and she ran that show for a long time before she handed it off to me and the folks who do it now.
Yeah, I would similarly say that, like, in some of the outside organizing, non-radio organizing that I've been involved with, like, we always used sort of that relationship with the Prison Radio show in town before I got involved to help communicate and have relationships with prisoners around Prisoners Justice Day and things like that, and it was really an invaluable resource. And so people for years put the work in to build those relationships and set up that infrastructure. I've only been involved for a short time. The other thing that I think of sometimes is some of the hip-hop I used to listen to, like, extensively use, like, Mumia Abu-Jamal's samples and other people, and I always thought that was a really interesting way to spread those ideas. And we've done a little bit of that too, where we've had a couple local musicians sort of pair up with one or two prisoners that we were in touch with and do some kind of, like, musical and spoken word kind of stuff with some of the phone calls. And it's been a really interesting way to kind of share those words at public events and have a kind of broader and more diverse way of, like, kind of connecting with people.
For me, I don't think it was any one particular project that inspired me. I'm sure other people involved in June 11th have their own things that have inspired them. But definitely just doing this limited series of interviews has made me appreciate even more the work that y'all and so many other people do making this happen weekly or monthly. Like, it's a lot of work, and it's really impressive that people have been so reliable and consistent in doing that.
A really situational question that wouldn't apply to many of the listeners, but I wonder if anyone has any suggestions to someone who's maybe already on the road to producing some sort of audio and they want to incorporate the words of prisoners in their own voices. Are there things we can talk about in this recording that would be helpful towards approaching that, either like trying to build a relationship or working on getting audio? Maybe that's not an appropriate question for...
No, I think I have a few thoughts. Yeah, one of them is, like, you are building a relationship. Like, I think sometimes media work can be super exploitative, especially folks on the inside. And folks on the inside, like, have things they need help with and reasons why they want to be in contact with the media. And so being clear on ways you can help people, which can really only happen through being willing to build a relationship with people and not just relate to something as, like, a one-off interview or... like, you get your content for your show and you move on. Like, it feels really important to me to be also really clear with people about what and how your outlet can be useful for them and what they're trying to do, and keep that at the center of what you're doing.
Yeah, so one thing that we do to make contact is just regularly reading the newspaper, and so we live in a prison town, and so sometimes local prisoners will write letters to the editor or be speaking to the media on behalf of some kind of, like, action or campaign on the inside, and so we try to make sure to write letters to those people, and it's been a pretty successful way to make contact. And sometimes people are just on pen pal sites, too, and looking for people to correspond with, and just being really upfront about why you're reaching out and what you'd like to do from the beginning, and honest about your intentions, I think, goes a long way, and following through with the things that you're offering.
I think that our project tends to find or get in contact with prisoners by soliciting people that are already doing support for various prison projects. So if we hear about something on one of the news sites, like It's Going Down, for instance, or through more mainstream media, then we'll seek out comrades that might be organizing in the area and see if they have any other words that they can share about what's going on, or ways of getting in touch with and amplifying the voices of the people that are on the inside, which can feel a little bit like fire truck chasing sometimes. Like, oh, there's a riot over there. run, get your mic. But
yeah, we did a lot of that too, finding, you know, support people and support crews who are already working with people and going through them, you know, because they might already have their phone number approved to get calls from them. And so we're hoping to do this again next year, and I think that will be even more important this year, kind of facilitating that through support crews. Especially, we would like to do maybe some more international interviews, and that's a little bit trickier, you know, with language barriers and things like that. But that's something that we're interested in exploring.
If somebody's listening to this, and in terms of Erica and the June 11th audio crew, how should they get a hold of you and, yeah, start that conversation?
Yeah, you can email us at June 11th, which is, with a TH at the end, at riseup.net, and let us know if you have any ideas for good interviews, either people in prison or supporters, former prisoners, and we can talk about it. You can listen to the interviews from last year at our website, june11.org.
Do the folks at CFRC want to talk about how to get in contact if folks have resources they might want to toss your way or questions? And where can they listen to your audio also?
There's a number of ways. There's an email address, cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. We also archive all of our stuff at cfrcprisonradio.wordpress.com. And we have a phone number, which is 613-329-2693.
For people that aren't in Canada, what's the nation code?
One.
Oh, it is.
Plus one, yeah. It's the
plus
same.
One, same as the U.S.? I didn't know that.
And then our mailing address is CPR, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. And the postal code is K as in Kilo, 7, L as in Lima, 3, N as in November, 6. And we welcome letters. We always respond to them from anywhere.
I'm so impressed. I do not have our address memorized. I'm trying to have our address memorized. You can get in touch with the Prison Radio Show in Montreal through our email address. We're at prison@ckut.ca. Our show is archived both on CKUT's website, and you can listen to it like live internationally on our website, which is ckut.ca. Their archives are a bit tricky to use, and shows disappear after 3 or 4 months, so we also archive our show on our own blog, which is prisonradioshow.wordpress.com.
And that was a rebroadcast from the Final Straw Radio. It was a conversation between Bursts from the Final Straw, Virginia from the Prison Radio Show in Montreal, Rico and Alex from the Prison Radio Show in Kingston, Ontario, and Erica from the June 11th Day of Solidarity with Long-Term Anarchist Prisoners. The time is currently 5:30, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at CKUT.ca. After some ads, we'll be hearing an interview about the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar launch, which is taking place tomorrow, 6 p.m. at Cupburg Concordia. So stay tuned. But first, here's Peter Collins with a song.
It's a happy song about getting out of prison. You know, it's dedicated to all those people who kept in so long and then let out with virtually nothing and have to try and figure it out. So, got out of prison. The lyrics by Doug Dockstader and Pete Collins, and the music and singing by Pete. So, got out of prison just yesterday. Got out of prison just yesterday. An old pair of jeans and he's on his way. Morning sun. After 30 years, it feels kind of done. Ain't got no friends, ain't got no home. Got no friends, ain't got no home. On a street corner, he's all alone. The store window reflects a stranger. Door window reflects a stranger. Strange to himself, but not to danger. Well, he's a changed man out on the street. His world was cold and dead.
This New Year's, join us for the annual New Year's Eve Noise Demo. We'll be sending loud messages of solidarity to those spending the holidays behind bars, renewing our commitment to fight for a world without prisons. On December 31st, meet at 4:30 p.m. at Metro Henri Bourassa. From there, we'll bus to the prisons in Laval. For access info or other questions, email nyecontreprison@riseup.net. Dress warm and bring something to make some noise. That's Sunday, December 31st, 4:30 p.m., Metro Henri Bourassa. See you there.
Welcome to the Prison Radio Show here on CQT. Tomorrow, December 15th, there's going to be an event at QPRC Concordia against prisons, racism, and repression. It's a Certain Days calendar launch as well as a Curse Blibidub book launch. And on the phone with us right now, we have Carl from Curse Blibidub Publishing. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you are involved in this event. You are a book distributor and a book publisher. Maybe you can first tell us a little bit about the books you distribute. What types of books do you typically carry in your distro?
Sure. Well, I've been distributing and publishing books for, at this point, almost 20 years. I can't quite say 20 years yet. The books that I distribute tend to be run the range of like progressive left-wing issues, feminism, anti-racism. I distribute the Certain Days calendar, which it's also a launch for tomorrow at QPIRG. The books that I publish tend to have a tighter focus. They tend to be communist, anarchist, and very specifically anti-colonial and feminist, with a big focus on writings by people in prison, especially political prisoners and prisoners of war.
Yeah. How do you come across the books that you do end up publishing?
Well, people, at this point, people contact me, and unfortunately, because people contact me constantly with actually really great manuscripts and books, but because I'm a very, you know, this is a very small publishing operation, I actually have to say no to most people. Because I've been, you know, doing prison work for a number of years, I get a lot of manuscripts from prisoners, which are often really, really good manuscripts. But unfortunately, again, because, you know, just because of a matter of resources, I often have to say no. I've developed over the years long-term relationships with some people, for instance, with David Gilbert, who is one of the prisoners behind the Certain Days calendar, and whose book, Looking at the U.S. White Working Class Historically, we're launching tomorrow. And, for instance, also Jay Sakai, whose book we're launching tomorrow, The Dangerous Class, is someone else who I've developed a long-term relationship with. So at this point, it's very much people who I've been working with for years. Not only, but largely, who I feel, you know, we have mutual commitments to the same kinds of politics.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about David Gilbert's book. First of all, who is he? And why won't he be at his book launch tomorrow?
Well, David Gilbert is a white anti-imperialist from the United States. He was involved in a group called Students for a Democratic Society in the 1960s, and then in a group called the Weather Underground in the 1970s. And then, you know, advancing essentially anti-racist, anti-imperialist revolutionary politics. And then in the very early 1980s, he was involved in an operation where, unfortunately, a number of people died. It was an attempted robbery. And even though he himself was unarmed, I believe, during this operation, according to the law in New York State, if you're in any way a part of something like this and someone dies, you're charged with murder. So he's actually, even though this happened over 30 years ago, over 35 years ago, he's still in prison today.
And the title of his new book is Looking
at the U.S. White Working Class Historically. It's a book which grew out of an essay or a series of book reviews, in fact, that he wrote way back in the 1980s and which he's added to repeatedly over the years, trying to come to terms with the contradictory reality of the white working class in the United States, which on the one hand, you know, suffers from insecurity and, you know, definitely aren't the people who are running society, but on the other hand, do enjoy a number of privileges and fairly consistently have sided with the white supremacist ruling class against more oppressed people in the United States. So this is a book which really tries to look at the history of this perverse class identity, if you will, and unravels it, you know, historically, going back, you know, basically to the foundation of the United States. And of course, given the election of Donald Trump last year, you know, the entire subject took on new meaning, and David started writing, started researching, and all of this, and that's essentially how these few little book reviews and little essays over the years turned into this booklet, which we're launching tomorrow.
What do you suppose are the challenges of writing and publishing a book from prison?
There are so many, because I've published a number of writers in prison. Everything from guards systematically destroying correspondence from publishers or editors, to refusing you research materials. In one case, in more than one case, people have ended up disciplined in prison as a result of trying to get their writing done or as a result of things they've published. Another prisoner whose work I've published, Kevin Rashid Johnson, he's in Florida at the moment. He's routinely punished and threatened by guards because of writings that have been published either in print form or on his website. So, you know, writing from prison is not like most other kinds of writing.
Let's talk next about the second book that's launching tomorrow. So
The Dangerous Class.
Yes.
It's a book by Jay Sakai, who's spoken at the Montreal Anarchist Book Fair a few times. And in fact, he gave a talk, kind of a precursor talk to this book a couple of years ago in Montreal on the topic of the lumpen proletariat, which is a class designation that he traces the term back as one can to Marx and Engels, basically referring to different kinds of folks and different ones of their writings. And he basically, you know, these are bandits, criminals, street people, but also people in some societies, you know, for instance, you know, Marx described opera singers as members of the lumpen proletariat. And he looks at Mao, who described various people as members of this class or who, in a sense, removed them from this class, because in classical Marxism, the lumpen proletariat aren't supposed to be good guys. They're not supposed to normally have good politics, but as Sakai describes in this book, the reality is actually a lot more complex. And, you know, in many situations where revolutionary politics break out, the lumpen proletariat end up playing important roles on many sides of the conflict. And although the left, especially Marxism traditionally, looks at the working class as, especially industrial workers, as the people who will make revolution, you know, Sakai uncovers that historically it's actually often been these people who've had a much less secure or routine or quote-unquote normal class reality and who end up getting described as lumpen. So it's actually the first book of its kind like this, I think, to look at these people not from a sociological perspective, not from a perspective of, you know, law enforcement or rehabilitation or anything like that, but basically looking at these people from the perspective of making revolution. I'm very excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask how you saw this book fitting into the event Against Prisons, Racism, and Repression.
Well, as you know, members of the lumpen proletariat often face extreme repression. They're often criminalized, and they often live, you know, they're often very easy scapegoats. If you look at a lot of law and order campaigns, if you look at, you know, criminalized populations, they're, you know, at least in the propaganda put out by the state, they're often marginal people with unusual kinds of lives who are being targeted, who are considered dangerous, who are considered out of sorts. What Sakai unravels, though, is that you also have these people playing a disproportionately large role on the other side, that a lot of people who end up in law enforcement or working as prison guards or career military are, if you would, they're kind of like oppressor nation members of the lumpen. They also don't have regular lives. They also routinely break the law. They also, you know, operate in many ways like secretively or conspiratorially or whatnot, only they're doing it in favor of oppression. So in that sense, you know, if we look, for instance, at many of the forces on the far right in the United States, or here in Quebec, if we look at many of the forces on the far right, we'll see the lumpen proletariat or members of the lumpen overrepresented. But also if we look at the people being attacked, people being marginalized, people being criminalized, we'll definitely find lumpen people being overrepresented. So in that sense, similar to David's book, they're both trying to understand in class terms, you know, what's happening in society, and in class terms, what's driving, if you will, the drift towards a more violent and authoritarian and fragmented social reality.
So these are two new publications. You mentioned that you've published other books from prison. I'm wondering maybe if you could speak more about how these two books in particular contribute to maybe the canon of prison literature that's out there.
Well, I should say right off, Jay Sakai is not in prison. Mm-hmm. He's never been in prison. So his book doesn't so much add to the canon of prison literature as so much as it's a book that addresses a subject that many revolutionary prisoners who I'm in touch with are intensely interested in. Many revolutionary prisoners who I'm in touch with identify themselves as members of the lumpen. Many, like David, went into prison as a political prisoner. He went into prison because of his activities as a revolutionary. However, most people who end up in prison don't end up there that way. They end up there through, you know, through various other mechanisms. And most of the revolutionary prisoners who I'm in touch with didn't end up going to prison as a result of being members of a specific political organization. They ended up going there essentially because they had criminalized ways of earning a living, or they were a part of criminalized communities. And like I said, many of them in that sense identify as lumpen. And as revolutionaries, they're definitely interested in understanding society and understanding how to change it. And for that reason, many of them have expressed a keen interest in Sakai's book. As for David's book, although he's been in prison now for, you know, over 30 years, his book's actually not dealing with the reality of prison. So it would be an example, if you're talking about prisoner literature, it would be an example of the contribution that a revolutionary, even once behind bars, continues to make to the struggle. And as he explains in the introduction, one of the reasons he's excited with this book coming out is these essays that he's written over the years are actually essays that have had a large impact on large numbers of people outside of prison. So he's actually not writing, Sakai, who's outside of prison, his writings are definitely of interest to a lot of prisoners. I'm sure David's are too, but David's very much writing as a way of reaching through the bars, you know, reaching through the walls and communicating his insights to new generations of radicals and revolutionaries on the outside.
Generally, what would you say is the role of radical publishing for revolutionary movements? You kind of touched on this a bit already.
Well, I think it's about developing theory. I think it's about allowing people a chance to exchange ideas, to learn from people's experiences. In the case of David, someone's experiences who, you know, he's in prison for a reason. They don't want us to learn from his experiences. And that's true, in fact, of many of the people involved in the Certain Days calendar. You know, although I'm not involved in publishing Certain Days, I distribute it. And one of the reasons it's such an important project is it allows many of the contributors are in prison, and they're in prison to separate them from our radical movements, and in that sense, radical publishing is a way of countering that. More broadly, I'd say radical publishing is a way of developing theory, and without theory, you know, we can carry out some good actions, we can be involved in some interesting campaigns, but without proper theory, we don't learn well. We don't predict what's going to happen very well, and we tend to burn out a lot more quickly. So that would be what I'd see the role as being.
Carl, thanks so much for joining us here on the Prison Radio Show today, for speaking about the two books, David Gilbert's Looking at the U.S. White Working Class Historically and Jay Sakai's The Dangerous Class and the Revolutionary Theory, Thoughts on the Making of the Lumpen Proletariat. We did speak with a member of the Certain Days Calendar Collective in recent weeks, so we're focusing less on the calendar, but the launch is happening tomorrow, December 15th, at Cooper Concordia at 6 p.m. It's 1500 Boulevard de Maisonneuve West, Suite 204. Carl, did you have any final thoughts or comments you wanted to add? Maybe what do you hope people take away from the launch event tomorrow?
I hope they take away books and calendars. But on a deeper level, there's got to be people talking at the event about deaths in prison in Canada, which have occurred recently. There's got to be people talking about local campaigns against prisons and also repression that local activists are facing. And I hope that people who come get a sense of the movements that exist and have a chance to connect with other people involved in those movements.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Prison Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. That was an interview with Carl from Chris Blebeda Publishing talking about an event that's taking place tomorrow. We wanted to share with you a call out from the Prison Radio Show in Kingston. Calls from Home is a monthly segment on CFRC 101.9 FM's Prison Radio Show that connects friends and family with their loved ones behind Kingston's prison walls through the power of community radio. They wanted us to let people know that they are currently accepting, they're doing a special broadcast for their holiday Calls from Home on Wednesday, December 20th at 7 p.m. And you can tune in to that show at 101.9 FM in the Kingston area or online at cfrc.ca. They also write, "The holidays can be an especially difficult time of year to be apart from loved ones and community. This is a great time of year to let prisoners in the Kingston area know that you're thinking of them by sending a greeting, requesting a song or poem, or leaving a voicemail message to be read or played on the radio. Personal and general messages of support are both welcomed and encouraged. If you want to call them and leave a message, you can call 613-329-2693. You can also email them at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net, or you can message them on Facebook or Twitter. Their handle is CPR Kingston. For more information about their special broadcast and to listen to archives of their show, you can go to www.cfrcprisonradio.wordpress.com. Up next, you're going to hear a song that was requested to be played at the New Year's Eve Noise Demo last year, and we're just going to play it again for you guys.
Boom. We are in these prison walls, doing my paces, doing my time. I am spending my restless nights, visioning faces. Oh, they all cry. Prison on a bed of roses, the levity it makes me bark. I wish that child could come and take us back in time. Cause I swear that I can be a better man. Yes, I swear. The faith in me and set me free, reflection. Da 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 da. Behind these metal bars, to judge I'm chanting, pray for your love divine. ordained to be mine. Impossible to see the changes that I've made in my life. All they see is just the boy they left behind. And I swear that I can be a better man. Yes, I swear, yeah. If only you could understand the fate of me, success, and sleep reflection. The fate of me, success. Da 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 da. Don't judge me wrong, 'cause now I'm stronger than I was before. I was young and unwise. Didn't you hear my cry? Possible to see the change that I've made in my life. All they see is just the boy I left behind. 'Cause I swear I can be a better man. I swear only you could understand. I swear, yeah, I can be a better man.
That was the song Reflection by Jacquier. It was a request that we received last year during the New Year's Eve Noise demo that happened in Montreal. You've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, December 22nd at 11 a.m. We're hoping to put together a year in review of the show, so check it out if you want to know what we have been up to for the last year. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to get involved in the show, feel free to contact us. We're online at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. People can also leave a message on our listener comment line. That number is 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. You can write to us at the Prison Radio Show or simply write PRS. Care of CKUT, and our address is 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Virginia, and Candace and I have been your hosts for today. Please stay tuned.
There is this thing.
Do you realize what is?
There is this thing.
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news, brought to you live.